Campaigning for reform, Governor Terry Branstad crisscrossing the state seeking support for changing Iowa schools. A conversation with Iowa Governor Terry Branstad on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals. For decades, Iowa Press has brought you policymakers and decision makers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating 41 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, October 28th edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
A couple of months from now, Iowa's General Assembly begins a new session. Everyone's wondering if it'll be as contentious as the session earlier this year that went more than 2 months past the scheduled adjournment. Republicans and Democrats in that session wrangling over budgeting and appropriation changes that newly elected Governor Terry Branstad insists are necessary for Iowa's fiscal health. Now, the governor is planning big changes in public schools. He's holding town hall meetings across the state, getting feedback on his proposals. And, of course, there's a lot more on the governor's legislative agenda, including a possible increase in the gas tax. Governor Branstad, welcome back to Iowa Press. We're going to cover those issues in depth.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you very much.
And across the Iowa Press table, public radio State House reporter Janine Beck, and Radio Iowa News Director Kay Henderson.
Governor, a commission that you handpicked has recommended a gas tax increase of between 8 to 10 cents per gallon. When will you endorse that?
Well, I don't know that I'm going to endorse it, but I do think it was appropriate for this group of citizens to take a look at what the needs are and to recognize the fact that we do have some infrastructure needs in terms of roads and bridges. The next step will be for them to make their report to the Department of Transportation. And then we will look at what makes the most sense with regard to, and especially looking at it in terms of the infrastructure needs for economic development. The number one issue in this state is still jobs, and we need to do all we can to try to attract more business and jobs to the state. That will be my primary focus in this coming session of the legislature. Last year, we got the state's fiscal house in order for the most part. It was not easy, but we did get essentially a two-year budget with a five-year projection, spending less than we're taking in. Now we need to focus on those things that can bring more good jobs to the state of Iowa, including improving the education system and the infrastructure.
Well, if the infrastructure needs repair and you need more money to do it, where else do you get it than by the gas tax?
Well, I think we need to look at the fact that everything is changing out there. We're seeing people now driving more fuel-efficient vehicles. We're seeing electric vehicles. I'm told that we may see a lot of trucks moving to natural gas or LP. And so we need to have a new system. And I think it needs to be a pay-as-you-go basis rather than doing it with borrowed money, because you can only build half as many roads if you do it that way. So we're looking at what are the innovative changes we can make. Also, what kind of savings can we have in reducing administrative costs in the Department of Transportation and at the local level, looking at ways we might be able to share resources with local governments. I would say one of the things I'm really proud of is what the DOT has done with rebuilding a 680. You know, that was wiped out because of the flooding in western Iowa. Mm-hmm. They put together a unique contract. We have private contractors working with the DOT with incentive. I'm going to be there on November 2nd. That road is going to be reopened. Now, it was underwater all summer and fall, and finally emerged from the flooding a little over a month ago, and in less than a month, or a little over a month, I don't know, in a very short period of time, it's being rebuilt. I think that's a great example of public-private cooperation and the contractors working with the state, and a great example of what can be done if we work together.
Well, one final question on this topic. So you would contemplate some other type of user fee for electric cars, propane-propelled cars,
I think we need to look to the future and say, what's going to happen? And I think most Iowans would say it ought to be a user fee so that the people that use the highways would be the ones that would pay for the benefits of it. And also, it needs to be equitable so all the vehicles pay their fair share. And that's not an easy thing to do because we're in a position of transition. But I think what we recognize is In fact, one of the good things that's happening is Alcoa, because of the move to lighter vehicles, is expanding their plant in Davenport. It's going to be 180 really good jobs. And that's my real focus, is jobs. And I think that that's an example of the fact that we're going to have lighter, more fuel-efficient vehicles, and we're going to have to look at new ways we can provide for the highway transportation needs.
Governor, this week there was two debates held in Senate District 18, a special election involving Cindy Golding and Liz Mathis, the runoff. And this could decide who controls the Iowa Senate. Are you concerned with how that race is going? You've got Cindy Golding on occasion distancing herself from you, saying she was not your chosen candidate. You have Senate Republicans infighting, trying to decide who's going to control or be their majority or minority leader, depending on the outcome of that race. Is that race winnable for Republicans?
Well, I think it's winnable. Obviously, the Democrats have a very well-known celebrity candidate who was a TV anchor, and so she's got tremendous name recognition. However, Cindy Golding is a businesswoman, and she's focusing on things like the right-to-work law and preserving federal deductibility, critically important to jobs. Jobs is the number one issue, and so I think the focus on jobs is important, and I think we need obviously a fair shake in the Senate in terms of our opportunities there. But I'll work with whoever gets elected, but I think Cindy Golding, because of her business background and her understanding and her knowledge of the issues like federal deductibility, the right to work law, those are very important to our state and our competitiveness in attracting jobs.
Are Senate Republicans doing enough in that race, in your mind? I mean, that's been what some of the bickering has been about, whether leadership's doing enough to win that race.
Well, I hope so. And I think there's a lot of people, including Matt Strawn, the Republican state chairman, and House Republicans as well as Senate Republicans, that recognize this is important. We all need to work together on it, and I'm very hopeful that we'll see a really great turnout for that special election.
Governor, I covered the Board of Regents this week meeting in Cedar Falls on the UNI campus. We have several questions coming out of that meeting. One of them is, and they were considering a tuition hike, as you know, an average of 3.75% increase across three state universities. Of course, the rhetoric always comes up when tuitions increase. The Regents say, well, the state is decreasing their share of what traditionally had been supporting state universities, and more, we're having to shift more of that now to the students and tuition. Out of that came Bob Downer of Iowa City, an appointee on the and a Republican appointee on the Board of Regents, but he came up with a pretty novel perspective, and that was, he said that we are forcing Iowa graduates out of the state of Iowa in order to pay their ever-increasing student debt, because Iowa salaries just aren't what they are in New York City or Chicago. And so our workforce and economic development for the future is in jeopardy because we're forcing students to go out of state in order to pay off their student debt.
Well, that's why I ran for governor, because I want to change that. I want to bring good-paying jobs to Iowa. And just this month has been our best month yet in terms of creating good-paying jobs. CJ announced, you know, there are going to be 180 great jobs in Fort Dodge. We've got Alcoa. Just yesterday it was announced that Amana, they're closing some other plants and going to add 160 jobs in Iowa.
That's right.
So we need to continue to focus on reducing the tax and regulatory burden and bring those good jobs to Iowa so Iowa graduates have that opportunity. I also think it's important that students take responsibility as well to not borrow as much money as they can. You know, when I went to the University of Iowa, my parents weren't in the financial position to really pay for my college. So I worked, and I also borrowed money. But I'm proud to say I never missed a payment. I paid that. I didn't get the loan paid back until I was governor. But I do understand the interest and the concern that students and families have. I would also point out, compared to Illinois, compared to many of our neighboring states, our tuition is still a bargain compared to those states. But I am very cognizant of the concern that students and families have about the increase. Also, this increase is modest compared to what happened when Vilsack was governor, when they had 18 and 20% increases in tuition.
Iowa's community colleges are also increasing tuition to attend at those attendant centers. There is some concern that there's so much demand for retraining that community colleges can't meet the demand. And in other states, community colleges have waiting lists for people to get into certain programs. Is there a danger in Iowa that the state isn't investing enough in community colleges and that sort of backlog waiting list situation will happen in Iowa?
Well, fortunately, I think community colleges are doing a great job in our state. And we also have dual enrollment. We have high school students that are getting college credit. I was just in Creston, and I was just impressed. In fact, at the town hall meetings we've been having with students, the number of students that are dual enrolling and getting job training opportunities while they're still in high school, looking to the future, I think those are great. Also, one of the last things we did in the session was provide some additional money for community colleges. Community colleges are where a lot of our students start now. We had one family from Boone that they dual enrolled while in high school, got enough credits to graduate from DMAC and Boone the same time they graduated from high school, went to Iowa State, and then came to Des Moines University. Three members of the same family. The oldest one, Katie Howe, has now completed her residency, come back, and now she's emergency room physician at the Boone County Hospital. That's a great example of a success story. And we want these graduates to have good job opportunities in Iowa. Rockwell Collins is adding some great jobs in the technical area. I'm impressed with what John Deere is doing. I've also been recently to the Bridgestone plant here. Much different manufacturing jobs than we used to have require important skills, and we need to make sure the students get the education and training prepare for those skills.
Well, Governor, as we stick with higher education for just another moment or two, one of the other arguments that's been made at a couple recent Board of Regents meetings is that whether the University of Northern Iowa has the right business model. 92% of their students are Iowa students. They say that's difficult for them when the tuition reimbursement from the state or the appropriation from the state is reduced. It's harder for them to make up the difference in out-of-state students who pay a lot more in tuition. Is their business model bad?
No, I don't think their business model is bad. I think UNI is a great school. You know, their graduates in accounting, I think, have about the highest pass ratio on the CPA exam of anybody. They got a great business school. They got a great education school. Now, in terms of the funding, I think we need to look at the formula because you're right. They don't have as big a mix of out-of-state or foreign students as Iowa State and the University of Iowa. And because of that, and since they're relying more on tuition, I think the state, when we look at the appropriation mix between the universities, needs to take that into consideration. So that's something I think for the future that we do need to take into consideration when we look at Regents funding.
Do you think they ought to recruit more from out of state? Because President Ben Allen has said in his very words, we have a bad business model. Former Regent Michael Gartner also advised UNI in March of this year to recruit more out of state students in order to stay afloat.
Well, first of all, I would say I think a lot of Iowa students choose UNI because they think it's a great school and it's a smaller school and they feel they get more individual attention. So I think it's fine if they try to recruit more out-of-state students. But I think the University of Northern Iowa has always been a school that does a great job of educating Iowans. And a lot of them stay here, and we want more of them
but
to stay.
But they do come up on the short end of state appropriations,
right,
as compared to Iowa and Iowa State. In fact, a student leader, in talking with the Regents yesterday, making a presentation, used the words, and he cited the fact that 92% of UNI students are from Iowa.
Right.
And he also said, we keep more UNI graduates in the state,
right,
than do Iowa and Iowa State. And you're agreeing with that. Then he used the words, but in state appropriations, we are undervalued and unappreciated.
Well, and I think we need to change that. I think the point is that the formula has not taken into consideration that at UNI, most of their students are from Iowa. They don't get the benefit of the higher out-of-state tuition. And consequently, I think as we look to funding formula for the Regents in the future, that needs to be taken into consideration. I'm sorry that hasn't been done in the past, but I think as we look to the future, that's something we can change.
As we look to the past week, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker came to Iowa to give a speech to a private event. You defended, before that event started, his actions in Wisconsin with regard to collective bargaining rights for unions. Do you think he acted appropriately in Wisconsin, and do you hope to make the same sort of changes here?
Well, first of all, you know, their situation is different than ours. And I think Scott Walker, like I, inherited a big mess. In fact, his situation was even worse than mine. They had a much bigger projected deficit, and they had to make tough decisions. I think he's done the right thing, and he's focused on jobs, and Wisconsin is making great progress. Compare that to Illinois. Illinois raised taxes, and they're $6 billion behind in paying their bills. So I just think that governors like Scott Walker and Kasich and the other Republicans that came in this last election recognized that we needed to do what our colleagues in New Jersey and Indiana had done, and that is put the focus on jobs, reduce the size and cost of government, and reduce the tax and regulatory burden to make our economies grow. And Wisconsin has had success. We're having success in Iowa in the focus on jobs, and I want to see the focus on jobs.
So if the outcome of the 2012 election is that Republicans control both the Iowa House and the Iowa Senate, will you propose significant changes in Iowa's collective bargaining law?
No, we're not looking at that. We're looking at things that we can do to attract more business and jobs to our state. And that's where I'm going to focus. Reducing the commercial and corporate income tax, putting limits on property tax for all classes of property, and those things that can attract more jobs. We still have 100,000 people out of work. October is going to be our best economic development month yet. We were one of six states to get an I-6 green grant, 140 applicants. Iowa was one of six chosen. We got the CJ announcement, you know, great jobs in Fort Dodge. We are excited about, and on Monday I've already, by executive order, established the Iowa Partnership for Economic Progress. These are business leaders from throughout the state. They're going to partner with the public sector in economic development. I'll name those people on Monday. So we're very excited about it. We're going to continue to focus on jobs.
Let's talk about jobs at the state prisons. Correction workers recently have protested at both Fort Madison and Anamosa, talking about unsafe conditions, in their opinion. The facilities are older. They're saying that there's not enough staffing. Do you think that they are been put in an unsafe situation?
Well, unfortunately, Governor Culver did a massive cut in January before leaving office. And we have provided $25 million additional money for corrections because we could see that jeopardize public safety and health. And you may recall we did a supplemental appropriation for corrections and mental health and human services during the session and then provided additional money for staffing. But we know the budget's tight. I've also been to Fort Madison.
Were they able to retain as many workers as you hoped?
Yes, I think they've been able to make significant progress. And also, Lieutenant Governor and I personally went to the prison in Fort Madison and went inside the prison, got a chance to visit not only with the correction staff, but also with some of the prisoners. We also saw the new prison under construction, which is going to be a safer but easier to manage facility. So, you know, I think we've got a lot of dedicated people that are working hard to protect public safety. And I personally took that as a responsibility to provide supplemental appropriations so we didn't jeopardize health and safety, and we appreciate the work that's going on to protect it. And this is $25 million more than was available in the previous administration, so I think we've made significant progress.
Republicans in this state are being courted by presidential candidates, some of whom are proposing flatter or a flat-out flat tax in income at the federal level. If that happens, are you prepared as governor to propose a flat tax at the state level?
Well, we have already reduced the corporate and individual income tax in Iowa. Actually, I want to make more progress on that in the future. And I think it makes a lot of sense to be as competitive as possible. And a lot of people are very concerned about the federal tax structure being too convoluted and too complicated. And we need to try to simplify it, I think, for all of our citizens and make our nation more competitive. What really concerns me is the federal corporate tax, which is among the highest in the world. And when I was governor before, we got a lot of Canadian companies to move here, six automotive component parts manufacturing, IPSCO Steel, Skyjack. But I had a company in Chicago tell me, we're thinking of moving to Canada because Canada now, they've got their financial house in order. The Canadian dollar is on par with the American dollar, where it used to be 65 cents to what we have. And now their corporate income tax is 18%. It's going to 15% next year. So they're saying unless the federal government reduces the burdensome federal tax and the penalties for bringing profits back to America, we may move there. So that needs to happen at the national level.
We're a long ways from a nominee yet, but do some of these income tax, these personal income tax proposals by some of the Republican candidates concern you?
Well, I guess I'm concerned about what Obama has done to our country. We cannot afford to have increasing the federal debt by $1.3, $1.4 trillion a year. We're becoming a debtor nation, and that has great concern because that means future generations are going to be loaded with debt and higher taxes, and it's going to stifle the American opportunity, the American dream, and the opportunity to
grow. But the candidates don't concern you.
Well, I think each of the candidates has their own plan, and I'm going to actually be a moderator on a debate they're going to have focusing on jobs. And I like the idea of reducing the regulatory and tax burden. The other thing is the regulatory burden. Obama's health care is unsustainable. What the EPA is doing, what Dodd-Frank is doing to the financial institutions. Our community banks in Iowa were not part of the problem, and yet they are being burdened down with all kinds of regulations and costs, which is making it more difficult them for making loans and to help us create jobs.
Governor, you expressed your concerns about the national or federal debt, and one of the things that's happening is the supercommittee is looking at ways to reduce that. What is likely to come out of it is reductions in Medicaid and Medicare, which has a significant impact on the state budget. And I know your budget director has talked about trying to prepare for that. Are you concerned that Iowa will see substantially less funding for those programs? And how do you trim them? Any proposals you had last session to trim them, a lot of them went by the wayside when they were unpopular.
Well, actually, we made some significant progress. Remember, the year before, they used $540 million of one-time money to plug the hole in Medicaid. I said I wanted it sustainable. I wanted to use ongoing revenue to pay for it. We did that, and we'd made some reforms and changes. I think Chuck Palmer is doing a great job of managing the situation. But you're right. The cost of Medicaid in the state when I left office was less than 12% of the budget. It's now 16%. And that's why we've got this initiative to be the healthiest state in the nation. We've got to get people to take ownership of their own health, and we've got to do all we can to reduce the cost.
We're not going to get healthy fast enough.
Well, we've got to work at it, and we've got to get people to buy into it. People need to have some skin in the game.
What's the immediate preparation, though, on the state level?
Well, and the other thing is, 2014, add another 100,000 people to the Medicaid rolls under Obama's health care. We can't afford that. So we're looking at, can we get some kind of a significant waiver and take an Iowa approach towards this? And so we're doing some discussion and looking at how can we collaborate with the medical schools, the healthcare systems in Iowa, Mercy System, the Iowa Health System, the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and how can we all work together? Because Iowa has a tradition in history of lower healthcare costs than most of the rest of the country. But we're going to need a waiver from the federal government.
When you say waiver, would that mean that you'd like to provide less services than are currently mandated by the federal government? I mean, are there certain benefits you think aren't necessary?
Well, we think the federal system is too complicated and convoluted and drives up costs, and we think there are better and more efficient ways to do things. We'd like to have the flexibility to do that. Just as we did welfare reform when I was governor before, we'd like to do substantial reform in the Medicaid system. And I think some of the things we're doing through the Healthiest State Initiative is an example of where we can incentivize people for doing the right things. Exercise, nutrition, and not doing risky things like using tobacco products.
Governor, way too many questions and too little time here, and we're getting to the end of the program. As I introduced you, I said that you're crisscrossing the state, getting ideas and promoting and explaining your education reform. 2 weeks ago on this program, we had representatives from the ISEA, the Teachers Union, and the school boards, the IASB, and both of them said, yes, we've read this. We understand it. There are some things that we can't buy into. What are you hearing around the state? Are you getting some pushback? And the question really is, are you prepared? Because you've said what I'm proposing isn't set in concrete yet. Are you prepared to modify your proposals depending on what you've heard?
The answer is yes. First of all, we've tried to go about this. This is systemic, significant reform that is designed to make Iowa's education system competitive so we prepare our young people for the jobs of the future in this world economy. And we are getting input and ideas.
Where are you going to change?
Well, we haven't decided for sure yet, and we also need to put a budget to support, and I won't know until December what the December revenue estimate is. I have to base the budget on that. So we will make recommendations based on that. We look at this as kind of a long-range plan and something we need to stick with for the long term. It's like I have a 10-year plan to get Iowa from middle of the pack to best in American education and world-class.
Where are you getting the most pushback?
Well, it's interesting. What we're finding
I'm
is
sure
most
it is, and
well, first of all, most people are saying we like the idea. We think we need systemic change. We think the focus on having a great teacher in every classroom and a great principal in every building makes sense. We want to set higher standards for our students. We need to have, and this is where we find a lot of support, the idea of having a new assessment system so we can measure the progress of students and encourage innovation in our school.
Well,
and
let me ask it this way. What's going to be the toughest sell?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, because different place. Generally, we're hearing good things about it, but you know, when you're trying to do systemic reform, it's just like when we reformed the reorganized state government. We had what we called the yes butters. Oh, yes, it's a great idea, but as it affects me, I don't want accountability. I think is one of the biggest challenges, but we need accountability to make sure that we have a great teacher in every classroom.
You said you won't know the price tag until December, basically until you know how much money you have to spend. That seems an odd way to calculate how to affect education reform. Shouldn't
well, some
you decide
of these things,
you need to do this and then decide how much it costs?
Well, yes. And I think really what it costs is going to determine how many years it's going to take to phase it in. We know this is something that you can't do overnight, and it's going to need to be thoughtful and systematic and done over a period of time, but we also want to make sure that we're redirecting some of the resources. We're spending 58% of the state budget in education. We want to redirect some of those resources to make sure that we're doing as much as we can. One of the areas we've talked about is healthcare. If we could do a statewide contract in terms of providing healthcare and we really get everybody on board for that, we may be able to save a huge amount of money that could then be redirected into education.
So is it all going to be savings, or do you think there's an appetite among Republicans in your party to spend more on education?
Well, I think if they can see we're going to get results, people don't want to just throw more money at the old system. They want a new systemic reform and change, and they're willing, I think, to invest in that if they can see that it's going to get us results and truly make Iowa students prepared for the jobs of the future. The focus needs to be on jobs and making sure we're doing all we can prepare our students for the job opportunities.
Quick question.
Well, I was just going to say, teachers will complain that this isn't systemic change, that the first three quarters of the document's about teacher reform and pay reform. Is that really largely what this is about, more than
we have only 15
reform?
Seconds.
I think everybody agrees that the most important thing for quality education is to have a great teacher. And we want to have a great teacher in every classroom in the state of Iowa.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you very much for being with us today. On our next edition of Iowa Press, we're talking with former governor, now U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack. He's also spending a lot of time in Iowa, traveling across the nation too, campaigning for President Obama's jobs legislation. Tom Vilsack at the usual Iowa Press Times next week, 7:30 Friday night, 11:30 Sunday morning. Reminder, too, the internet, your direct connection to our Iowa Press staff, the email address at the bottom of the screen. It's iowapress@iptv.org. I'm Dean Borg. And thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation, the Iowa Bankers Association for personal, business, and commercial needs. Iowa banks help Iowans reach their financial goals.